Good afternoon. I'm Anthony Galino, ICE Technical Coordinator. Welcome to the ICE 2020 Virtual Annual Conference. This session is Transforming Healthcare Delivery in the Midst of a Pandemic. I would now like to introduce today's moderator, Mike Myers, ICE Board President and Director of Agency Relations.
Thank you, Anthony. Before we get started with this afternoon's session, just want to thank everybody for attending, and let me go ahead and introduce our panel. First, we have Adam Bardi. In his current role at Blue Shield of California as Senior Director, Partnerships and Implementation on Healthcare Community Health Transformation Team, Adam and his team identify and engage with physicians and community-based organizations to design and implement transformative solutions. He has 20 years of operations, management, and consulting experience across the healthcare spectrum, including UCSF Health, Stanford Health, and Penn Medicine. Our next panelist is Amir Sweeha. Dr. Sweeha is board certified in family medicine and has been a member of Hills Physicians since 1996. He has been the chief medical officer for Hills Physicians Medical Group since 2016. Previously, he served as Hills Physicians board member and served on several of Hills governance committees. He also held leadership roles as Chief Medical Officer, Vice President of Medical Affairs, and Chief of Staff at Dignity Health, President and CEO of Mercy Faculty Practice Medical Group, and Program Director of Mercy Methodist Family Practice Residency Program. Our next panelist is Susan Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman brings more than 30 years of clinical and executive experience to her current role as Chief Medical Officer at Blue Shield Promise Health Plan. Prior to joining Blue Shield of California Promise Health Plan, she worked as principal at Health Management Associates. She also has held leadership positions at Kaiser Permanente, Anthem Blue Cross of California, and Venice Family Clinic in Los Angeles. Lastly, we have Francisco Oaxaca. Francisco joined LA Care Health Plan, the largest publicly operated health plan in the country, in 2014 as Director of Communications. In 2016, he was promoted to Senior Director of Communications and Community Relations, and in 2020, was promoted to Chief Communications and Community Relations. In this role, he reports to the CEO and the Chief of Staff and is a member of the CEO's leadership team. In his new role, Francisco will focus on the expansion of the Resource Center partnership with Blue Shield Promise and its strategic direction while continuing oversight of other business units in his portfolio. Thank you for being with us today, panel, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Anthony. Certainly a pleasure to be here today, and I'm sure you've heard this a lot. We all wish that we could be in person for so many reasons, but are grateful that we're able to do this remotely from all of our homes and offices and clinics. And so with that, I will dive right in. How about the next slide? Thank you. A lot of this information in the beginning shouldn't be new to most of us. We know that the current healthcare system today is unsustainable. Patients are spending more on healthcare and getting less. Employers spend 6 to 7% more year over year on healthcare expenses. And we need to address this problem systemically. If we do nothing to change our current way of managing healthcare benefits, what are the consequences and the cost? If individuals are spending more on healthcare, they'll have less to spend on housing and food. If employers have to spend more on healthcare costs, they may not be able to increase wages. And this is happening even more so right now. The increased shifting of money into healthcare hurts the economy and hurts individuals. And so how are we approaching this? This is what we call Health Reimagined. And we do so by focusing on the three pillars you see here and by focusing on what we've sort of internally called the quintuple aim. Many folks are certainly accustomed to the triple aim and even the quadruple aim, but our focus has gone beyond. So not only are we looking at improving whole population health, enhancing patient care and experience, and empowering patients to be part of their healthcare experience, but we're also focusing on improving the provider well-being, reducing the cost of healthcare, and increasing health equity. And we do so through the three pillars here: personal care, holistic health, high tech, and high touch support. And I'll touch only on a few of these today, because certainly our focus today is on how we as the healthcare industry have adapted in this changing time during the pandemic. Next slide, please. One of the ways that we have made some substantial changes in the industry is through our influence as a payer. We want to be a partner in healthcare and not just simply the payer in many ways. It's important to us that we look at ways to modify the payment structure, moving from a traditional more fee-for-service model into a pay-for-value or value-based care model. And as you can see here, we're looking at different components and different steps of the process to identify where we can partner in a more holistic way. Next slide, please. We also know that 80% of our health comes from factors and venues outside of what we think of as the traditional healthcare system, where only 20% of care is actually delivered. We know there are socioeconomic factors, including education, employment, income. There are health behaviors, such as tobacco use, diet and exercise, and our physical environments, transportation, home, water quality, air quality. And even within those categories, there are some very specific things that we must think about. And these we know of as social determinants of health. A common misconception is that social determinants of health only impact certain disadvantaged groups. Social determinants of health affect all of us. However, many are disproportionately and negatively impacted. And it's there that Blue Shield and all of our partners are interested to really determine how we can make a difference. Next slide, please. One of the ways that we have experimented and are piloting a program called Community Health Advocates. Our Community Health Advocates that we have funded throughout California help to develop a holistic understanding of a patient's health and social needs and help them navigate what we know to be a very complex medical system, helping them with referrals, connections to community resources, and helping them address the negative or adverse impacts of social determinants of health for their patients in their panel. They provide extra support, listening to the patient. We know from our experience that patients are very appreciative for the extra help. And the CHAs help with some small tasks, and even those small tasks mean a lot to the patient. The CHAs bring knowledge, personal experiences, and background in the communities within they work. They have shared experiences. They understand resources that are available. And CHAs have responded to current events, including COVID-19. Once the pandemic really hit us in March, the CHAs immediately adapted their communication approach, which was initially intended to be very on-site and in-person, and moved to a more telephonic interaction, but staying in touch with their patients and continuing to help them understand disease states, helping them find classes to better understand nutrition and connectivity to other community organizations. Next slide, please. One of the ways that we intend to continue to expand this reach and our focus on holistic health is through our holistic health platform. The intent of the holistic health platform is to optimize whole person health and address unmet social needs. And so we're building this integrative platform that community health advocates can use. It enables their hard work with data insights and information to understand local assets, community needs and community opportunities and resources, and new financial mechanisms to pay for health and well-being. And these are just some screenshots, of course, of the holistic health platform. Next slide, please. So as I start to wind down, and I'll hand off in a second to my colleague, Dr. Amir Sweeha, I wanted to just give you a quick picture of where we have been focusing some of our pilots. you can see that we've been focusing on five ecosystems or five areas in Butte County up in the north in purple, Sacramento County, which happens to be just due east of me. I'm in the Bay Area, in Los Angeles in the south, in Monterey County, not too far from me, and then of course here in the Bay Area. And in each of our ecosystems, we're piloting and testing a different combination of solutions and payment models. We've supported different organizations, and we're learning what can move the needle in transforming healthcare. And of course, we've had to pivot a bit during this time of COVID. Next slide, please. Just some early feedback, validating that our initial solutions and the hypotheses that we're testing. You can see just in a just broad brush strokes here that referrals, over 2,000 referrals have been made for 907 patients seen by 14 CHAs at 9 practice sites in Sacramento, Monterey, and Butte County. 28 community health advocates throughout the state, plus 22 more have been trained through our Blue Shield Boot Camp. And you can just take a quick glance at some of the other feedback that we've had. For example, 93% of women who've completed a birth planning shared decision making module found it very valuable and would recommend the same tool to their peers. Next slide, please. So again, at a very high level, and I won't go through each of these in the interest of time, but these are some of the things that Blue Shield has done to try to provide relief to our communities during the pandemic. We've supported the installation of virtual health services, including equipment and the technology in clinics across the state. We funded new programs to help alleviate the financial burden of the pandemic for our providers. Through Blue Shield of California Promise Health Plan, we've supported Medi-Cal members and providers during the crisis. We've provided 3,500 PPEs, items of personal protective equipment across the state. And you can see a handful of other things and important partnerships that we've developed in order to try to provide relief during this very difficult time. Next slide, please. And so with that, I'm going to hand this off to Dr. Amir Sweeha and let him take it from here.
Thank you, Adam. Really appreciate it. Well, first of all, I'm honored to be here today to talk with you a little bit about our great initiative with Blue Shield. And let me just rephrase this by saying, this is really when the vision of a health plan and a provider group, the visions overlap, and we make resources available for our docs, our communities, primarily to help our patients. I know we have a lot of the environment around us is with the pandemic is a little bit, a lot of negative environment around us. However, this is one of the exemplary work that is being done again during the pandemic and prior to the pandemic that resulted in a lot of good outcomes for our patients. So I'm very proud to present it today. And again, I'm very honored to be here. Let me tell you a little bit about Hill Physician. So how is this partnership between Blue Shield and Hill Physician? Of course, we've been working with Blue Shield for all these years, but we tried to put together resources that can be available for independent physicians who do not have resources for first better patient care, but particularly for areas that the independent physicians cannot address by themselves. And historically, whether health plans or an IPA like us, we try to provide the resources remotely. So we take care of these resources for them. I think what's unique about what you're going to be hearing about is that how do we embed these resources in the practices to be close to the team who's working on the patient as well as with the patient. So Hill Physician, we are the largest network of independent doctors in Northern California. Independent Physicians, the organization was founded in 1984. We have more than 4,800 physicians, primary care and specialties, covering geographic area in 11 counties in Northern California. Our MSO is PrimeMed, with 600 plus employees serving our network of physicians. We are contracted and we have relationships with 14 health plans, and we serve more than 380 members, including a lot of businesses, including commercials, HMOs, PPOs, Medicare Advantage, Medi-Cal, and also full risk plans. Next, please. So the pilot, we started the pilot a couple of years ago with a vision with Blue Shield of focusing resources at the offices for the physicians, where again, as I said, the team working with the patients. And the vision was about the core items that Adam mentioned, but primarily about enhancing revenues, operational issues that can work with the patients on the clinical conditions, and other operational issues, for example, that can enhance the efficiency and operation of the practices. We picked with Blue Shield six items. First, working on the payment models, and in first co-designing and enhancing the payment for independent physicians. You know, typically we had the fee-for-service model and we have capitated model. Our model is actually a hybrid where we still provide some basic support in addition to enhanced payments for improved care, efficiencies, and better outcomes. The second was the community health advocates. And I'm going to focus a little bit more about that in a second. But this is one of the issues that we've been talking about social determinants of health. How do we address them? This is a model of addressing them with the independent physicians. Basically, integrating these individuals who are very well experienced in addressing issues of social health, social environment. Embedding them in the practices, but also empowering them with the tools and the resources that can connect with the resources available in the community. We use the platform UniteUS as the platform. More than 20 elements of issues that can be addressed, a long list. I'm going to talk more about them in a second. The next is the drug price transparency tools. Again, bringing, we know about the cost of medications, and we know about also the what's covered, what's not covered, what are the choices for the providers. And as a physician, I can tell you, this is a big, really area that we've always needed help with to understand a little bit about what is the actual cost for the patient and what actual cost for the healthcare system and what are the choices. So, with this platform, we provide transparency at the time of service, the choices available for the physician, and the actual drug prices for that benefit, for that individual patient, not just for a population. Also sharing with the providers reports about what really, what are the, for all their patients, for example, for the individuals, What are the areas that are costing them more? And why is not affordable for the patient? What are the other choices? So whether at the presence of the patient in the clinic, also by reports, getting that transparency close to the provider, again, is very helpful. The shared decision making, this is another platform also using another technology where we provide a lot of information for the patient that with working with the docs, can make decisions based on facts and information. And by providing the patient directly to the patient, information directly to the patient, we are able to give the patient a lot more information than what the conduct can provide. All the information that we give to the patient are really under the guidance of the physician. But this is a way, again, of delivering a lot more to the patients so they can make decisions with the physicians. We're trying this, again, with specialists and with primary care. Tried it with OB for more information about choices for birth planning, for example. Endocrinology and primary care for diabetes, orthopedics and primary care for osteoarthritis, where decisions can be made at different stages of the diseases where interventions can be different and with better outcomes. The virtual visits, we started this before the pandemic, and this is one of the good things that COVID helped us with. It really accelerated the adoption of virtual visits by the patients and the providers. And we were ready for it, and really we were able to deliver with both the technology and the operations. And then the last one is the real-time claim, which basically, again, real-time for the provider and the patients at the point of care, where the provider knows exactly what the benefits, what the patient's benefits are, what's in the package, what's covered, what's not covered, for the patient also to know. That's not just about the drugs, but also about, you know, for example, what are the sites that that the patient can go for surgeries, for example. Which one, for example, you know, the network is working with, many other things with the claims, and also what is the copay for the patient, what is the cost for the patient, and the physician also gets the payment right away at the time of the visit. Next, please. The CHA was really one of the very successful programs that we implemented. And the vision about it is really to use these community health advocates, embed them in clinics, again, to address all the social needs for the patients. The coverage is provided across 7 independent practices. So we chose primary care and chose also specialties. And specialties, for example, we chose specialties that provide care for chronic disease management, let's say pulmonology, for example. The CHA really works with the clinic staff. The clinic staff and the providers know a lot about the patients. You cannot operate this remotely from our offices, for example, from our corporate offices. These issues were social issues, social needs, and the interactions with the patients by the clinic staff, the team who's working with the patient and the patient is probably the highlight of it. So how do we integrate these CHAs with the practices? Now, you can imagine, even before the pandemic, you can imagine the independent practices cannot afford, you know, adding more staff to address population health issues. So this is where Blue Shield and us, you know, are providing the resources for that. Then again, the CHAs do screen all patients and then connect the patients with the community organizations. And they're very much familiar with what are these community organizations are. They have also the platform that connect the patients on that platform with these organizations. And then so they can follow up. What happened? Did the patient really go and get the service? What are the barriers? What other services they will need? So the model is assessing patients prior to the visits. So the pre-provider patient workflow, doing all these assessments, sharing this assessment with the team the clinic team that were taking care of the patient and the provider. Having the provider also address some of these issues with the patient and what are the needs and which issues we're going to be focused on. And then follow the visit. Again, the CHAs would follow to make sure that the patients are connected with the services and their needs are addressed. Next, please. So as I mentioned, there were a little bit more than 20 elements being addressed. Prior to the pandemic and after the pandemic, this is what we have on the graph here. The blue is prior to the pandemic and the utilization of the different items, and then the impact of the pandemic on the social needs, that's the green. And you can see that food assistance, mental and behavioral health, housing and shelters, and support with utilities, there was a dramatic increase in the need for that. It's not that others are minimized, it's just, you know, the environment is different and the needs are different. So for example, for food assistance, that was a need for all the practices, primary care, specialty care, food lockers, food meal deliveries, and that was seen, again, consistent across all specialties. Behavioral health was a little bit more prominent in pediatrics, and you can imagine adolescent and school age, and there was more need in these areas. Housing and shelter, again, that was dominant in primary care, whether temporary or permanent housing. And then the last one was utilities. And you could imagine, for example, a specialty like pulmonology, where medical equipments are important and addressing some issues with that specialty. Again, these are across the board, but we saw a little bit maybe difference in some specialties over others. Next, please. The outcome is based on the testimonial from the providers and the patients. When we help the providers, that's really our success. The providers do not have, again, the time or the resources to be able to spend all this, on something that is so critical and important. And without that help, we can't say, well, have just the independent physicians practices just address social determinants of health. And we think, you know, the idea that they will be able to is not the desire or the willingness, it's really the resources available for them. And you can see from the testimonial that's coming from them, again, this is helping to embrace the total patient. They love it. Has really transformed our practice. And again, this is coming from orthopedic surgeons. From primary care, the community health advocate is helpful to the practice in addressing patients' non-clinical needs, a time saving, efficiency. From obstetrics, a whole new path. We were unaware of the depth of the social needs some of our patients have. And actually, I would add even to that, we were not even aware of the resources available for the patients. And again, another primary care would be difficult for the practice to fund CHA because often the yields are not reimbursable or refundable. But I think it saves money the long run. Our CHA goes out to find the patients in most needs. So the testimonials are there. It's a great exemplary project that we have with Blue Shield. And again, I go back and thank them for having the same vision and delivering on the vision together on this. And with that, I'm gonna pass it on to Francisco.
Thank you, Dr. Sweetha. Thank you, Adam, for the great presentation. And I'm going to pick up the ball here and with my colleague, Dr. Fleischman, spend a few minutes talking to you about some really exciting things we've been working on together. LA Care and Blue Shield of California Promise Health Plan entered into a very unique partnership last year. And I'd like to spend a minute or two talking about that. But I think it's really a crucial part of the work that we've been doing together now. And this was a partnership that was built out of conversations that took place several months before, earlier in 2019, between leadership at both health plans. And the conversations were really about how could the two plans work together to really transform how healthcare is delivered to the members that we both serve. And these are members that we both provide Medi-Cal coverage to. And as the conversations progressed, there was a realization that a lot of these great ideas that leaders from both plans were talking about were things that we could actually do using a resource center model. And the family resource center model is something that LA Care had been implementing since 2010, 2011. And LA Care already had several what we called family resource centers open in different parts of the community. And leaders from both plans decided this would be a great foundation to build from. And the plans executed a five-year, $150 million agreement to operate the existing LA Care Resource Centers as new jointly branded, jointly operated community resource centers, as well as open additional resource centers across Los Angeles County. One thing that we wanted to do was to maintain a key aspect of the spirit of the resource centers, which has been to always have the doors open to anyone in the community, not just limit the availability of the centers to health plan members. But what we did want to do as part of transforming our way of delivering healthcare to members was to create a different experience and really create a one-stop shop or a hub for plan members where we can focus on member engagement, we can focus on healthcare navigation, care management, and other services that traditionally have not been delivered in person, but really deploy staff that deliver those types of services out into the community to work through the centers, and also build stronger partnerships with providers in the areas around the centers, as well as help retain members in the plan. We also wanted to focus on delivering healthcare in new and more advanced ways by introducing and integrating technology and innovation to help build active, healthy, and informed communities through our resource centers. To give you a sense of the scope of what we're doing together, this map will give you the locations of both the existing centers as well as future centers that are planned. And if you're familiar with the layout of Los Angeles County, you'll see that we've got really broad coverage, both from north to south and from east to west. And the plan is to locate new centers in areas where there are concentrations of health plan members, but also to remodel existing centers, and in some cases even relocate them into larger spaces to be able to accommodate additional staff from both health plans. Up until the pandemic hit in March of this year, we were on a fairly aggressive expansion plan, which has slowed, but it has not stopped completely. We've been able to open five of our rebranded community resource centers as of November, and plans still continue, and we have identified all but one of the remaining sites to be opened jointly, and we have five sites currently in different stages of lease negotiations and construction, that we expect to be able to open all within the next calendar year in 2021. The current sites are in East Los Angeles, Linwood, our Metro LA location, which is the central city location west of downtown Los Angeles, in Palmdale, which is in the northern LA County, Antelope Valley area, and in Pomona, which is in the eastern part of Los Angeles County. As I mentioned, when the pandemic hit, all of our plans changed, and we were actually forced to close all of the centers back then due to the restrictions that had been placed by local health officials. But in late September, early October, we began reopening the centers, and we've implemented a number of different health and safety precautions, as well as limited traffic through limiting operating hours to 3 days a week, as well as only taking visitors by appointment. We created and implemented an online appointment scheduling application. We have full social distancing protocols in place, as well as physical barriers that provide additional safety, not only for health plan staff, but also for visitors to the centers. Now, one of the questions we had to answer right at the beginning was, before we reopened the centers, was why would we be reopening them? What would we be able to offer to the public and to our health plan members in a safe manner? And as you heard from Adam in his presentation, the needs that have appeared amongst individuals in the community because of this pandemic have been a combination of new needs, as well as needs that have always been there, but are much more severe now and in much greater need of being addressed. And this just gives you an idea of what we decided we could offer to the community once we reopened our centers that we felt would be essential and helpful. Basic customer care and customer service to plan members, also assistance with care planning, connections to community resources, as well as enrollment support. The centers were very popular prior to the pandemic because of the broad array of on-site programming, health and wellness, physical fitness programming that was offered at no cost. There were also pop-up type events, health screenings, and other types of community events that were held at the centers. I've highlighted the offering of telehealth resources and the offering of high-speed Wi-Fi services to the public. And I'll talk about those in a second. But the programming that was offered on site, since we were no longer able to offer that programming to the public, we completely switched over to a virtual programming effort and working with a number of our programming vendors who were offering our physical fitness classes, health and wellness classes, et cetera. We've switched over to offering all of those classes virtually through pre-recorded classes on a jointly branded YouTube channel. And we are close to beginning to offer live real-time streaming classes where participants will be able to log in and participate real-time with instructors in interactive classes. The pop-up events have also evolved during the pandemic period to really emphasize addressing one of the most important needs that has surfaced, and that is addressing food insecurity. And we have held almost 40 free food distribution events at or around each one of our resource center locations to help the community meet this need. And most recently, over the past 2 months, we've held 10 flu vaccination clinics where we're inviting the public to come to one of our centers or a location close by for a drive-through flu vaccination. We've administered almost 2,500 flu vaccinations through that program. But I do want to focus the last part of my presentation here on the issue of telehealth access. And I'm sure we're all aware of the tremendous increase in need and demand for access to telehealth consultations with providers. And even prior to the pandemic, one of the aspects of the site planning that we were doing as we designed our new centers, or we're going to be relocating existing centers into larger spaces, or even remodeling current locations, was including a telehealth suite or space. And this is simply a dedicated space with a laptop, with a microphone and a webcam that plan members could use to conduct a telehealth consultation through our telehealth vendor that is available to members as part of their Medi-Cal benefits. One thing we found during this pandemic in conversations with our community clinic partners is that there was also an increasing demand from providers at those clinics to be able to conduct telehealth consultations directly with their assigned patients. And that one of the barriers to that was not only patients having access to a space where they could conduct a confidential conversation with their provider in a direct telehealth consultation, but also in many cases we were finding that patients, especially those who are in the lower income category covered by Medi-Cal, either had an insufficient data plan associated with their mobile device or did not have a data plan at all, and so they wouldn't be able to conduct that consultation using a video chat function. So that's when we decided to expand access to not only the telehealth spaces to plan non-members, but also to begin offering public Wi-Fi with sufficient bandwidth to allow any member of the community to come into one of our resource center locations with an appointment and be able to use their own device and to be able to conduct that telehealth consultation with their provider and not have to worry about either not having a data plan or not having enough data to be able to complete that consultation. That was a new technology that we had not previously offered at our centers, and we fast-tracked the installation of that capability in three of our centers, and two more should have that capability installed in the next 30 days. What that has also led to is two new partnerships with key provider partners, one a large FQHC in the Los Angeles County area, and the other a hospital that has a clinic in the northern part of the county. And we are working with them to finalize the logistics and the workflows so they can actually schedule telehealth consultations for their patients with their providers and simultaneously schedule the use of the telehealth space at the nearby LA Care Blue Shield Promise Resource Center so that they can ensure that their patient has access to the technology and the infrastructure to be able to have that consultation with the provider. So it's opened the doors to really some new opportunities in helping our provider partners increase access to telehealth for their patients. So with that, I'd like to turn the microphone and the presentation over to Dr. Fleischman.
Thank you. My thanks to all the previous panelists and especially to Francisco. It's just been a pleasure to work together with you in the partnership to open up these community resource centers. And just a few comments before I dig into the slides is I just think we should acknowledge this remarkable shift to telehealth. I don't know how many people in the audience can remember when we thought about telehealth as something for rural communities, and we thought about telehealth as that thing where you roll the cart in and you try to get the specialists on synchronously while you have the patient in the primary care office, and all of the complexities and the platforms, and boom, pandemic, and suddenly the whole industry has shifted, and I was being very creative in using Zoom and FaceTime and whatever they can, and telephones to communicate both with members from a health plan perspective, but with patients from a patient care perspective. So what we've seen at Blue Shield, so it's remarkable. You know, it wasn't 10 years from research to practice. It was a month. Really remarkable. So at Blue Shield, we actually had some things in place that made the transition a little bit easier when the pandemic was hit and was announced. We already had a relationship with a vendor to provide urgent care via telemedicine. The reality, though, is that after, you know, and that was highly utilized for about a month, a lot of the practices shut down or were scrambling, trying to figure out what their mode of practice and being was going to be in March and April. It was a very challenging time for the provider world, and there was a lot of use of that. But what we've seen now is that most practices are doing telehealth on their own, using either a healthcare sophisticated platform or using Zoom or using FaceTime. I think the other thing that we've, and we don't think that that demand is going to go down. We think it'll remain high during the pandemic, but we don't think that we're going to go back to where things were before pandemic, because people and provider, patients and providers have gotten used to it. We do believe it will be a significant mode of interaction, but there still will be a need for some face-to-face visits. We've also spent some time thinking about how we engage our members. Sometimes those that have the least access to our digital tools to find out that they can get their health through a digital tool, we can't even let them know through a digital tool, and then also challenging to help them access care remotely. And so with that, I'll go to the next slide. So here are some of the things we've done around member engagement. Obviously, I think, you know, using your website is not innovative in any way, and it disenfranchises people who don't have a computer, don't use a smartphone to go to a website, and that's not the way they look for information from a health plan. So it's one vehicle, but it probably misses the people that we want to reach the most. We also have used written newsletters because those reach, again, the same audience and a different audience. We are also telling people who call inbound. So if they call customer care about something else, we are letting them know about telehealth, about our own urgent care, teledoc services that they can access, or about reaching out to their own providers to see if they can do a visit by phone. Or with video as well. We also did some risk stratification to target our members that we thought were at highest risk of getting sick, seriously ill from COVID. And so when we did those outbound calls, we actually looked for social determinants of health needs, connected people to services, but we also let them know about telehealth. And lastly, and very importantly, we offered these community resource centers. And I just want to echo what Francisco said, that the thinking really changed, again, from having to have kind of a sophisticated capability at the CRCs to enable telehealth to, you know what, we need a room for privacy and we need Wi-Fi. And when we talk about some of the limitations of telehealth for people with disabilities, you know, that may not be enough. So we have to rethink that. But for in the early days, the reality of people just using Zoom and FaceTime really shifted our thinking of what was necessary and what was helpful. Next slide, please. So this is from Beacon, who is a national mental health provider. And this is national, this is not California or Promise specific, but what they've seen as far as going, this is for outpatient. And you can see that the vast majority in gray, that they have really transitioned to not all services being telehealth, but this was a query of their practices. And a large number are doing mostly telehealth with some face-to-face. Some are still 100% face-to-face, and a small percentage are 100% telehealth. So again, you know, I think going forward, we need to have all these modalities available to take good care of people. Next slide, please. This is our own data. services with our mental health provider. And I will caveat that the scope of this is mild to moderate behavioral health issues. So because in Medi-Cal, serious mental illness is carved out to the state, those diagnoses and services are not included in here. And I think it would likely look a little bit different if they were. But just as compares year over year, the yellow is 2019, the red is 2020, and you can see these are utilized. There's a really dramatic and fast, I mean, it's stunning how fast this happened between March and April, really, adoption of telehealth in the treatment of mild to moderate behavioral health diagnoses. And the drop off in August and nothing in September is just data lag. So we have seen that those numbers are staying pretty consistent. We don't expect them to come down for a number of months. Next slide, please. And both our members and our providers adapted really quickly. This is also with the same vendor, so mild to moderate behavioral health. And we have divided it up by sort of payer source. So. And when it happens. So for Medi-Cal, you can see that again, that really dramatic jump from started February to March, and then a doubling of the use of telehealth from March to April, and then pretty much status quo. In Medicare, you can see that the same thing happened, slightly lower numbers overall, I think not surprising. A predominantly older population, not completely. Medicare is diverse, but slightly less adoption of using telehealth than in Medi-Cal. And then on the bottom is our CalMedi Connect members. Those are our dual members with both Medicare and Medi-Cal. And then again, you see the timeline of the bump is the same. Again, slightly lower adoption than in just straight Medi-Cal. So I think we would have predicted this. So not surprised, but you can see that it happened across all of Promise's payers and types of members. And then last slide, please. This is the last slide, or next slide. So what have we learned? Really rapid adoption. The other thing that we've seen, which I think no one is going to be surprised by, and this is around, again, behavioral telehealth, is that generalized anxiety disorder has now moved into the top five. I mean, I think we all read about that in the newspaper. These are very trying times for all of us and for so many of our members as they struggle with health concerns and COVID fears and business ruin and challenges to pay the rent and unemployment and food insecurity and all the things that you heard about from our first two speakers. And so I don't think we should be surprised to see this big increase in generalized anxiety disorder. Some of like the member and patient feedback, parents seem to like it, people who are caretakers. It's a little bit easier. You don't have to get in the car. You don't have to drive anywhere. You don't have to leave your house, so you save all that time. You just are busy during the actual visit. The other thing that members have reported, and I think we've seen this before the pandemic in rural hospitals that use telehealth for behavioral health, is that sometimes clients actually feel more comfortable in a non-face-to-face environment. So it's easier to cry. It's easier to be loud. For some people, it's just easier to be expressive and talk about their feelings, and it's just less threatening and probably less intimate without a face-to-face encounter. For people with mobility issues, where just the physical barrier of getting to the provider's office is a challenge, this gets rid of all of those barriers. When we get to the challenges, I'll talk a little bit about it creates a whole new set of barriers for people with other kinds of disability. But for straight mobility issues, it's definitely easier. And we have also heard reports of a lot fewer no-shows and actually better adherence to the treatment plan. Challenges. I don't think any of these are a big surprise. Really challenging to engage with younger children. Much easier to have the family in the room, be able to watch the child, use toys, all of those. The privacy issue that Francisco mentioned, part of the reason we've created these rooms in the CRCs is that many of our members don't have privacy at home to do a behavioral health or any kind of telehealth visit when their family member is around. Imagine being an adolescent and want to talk about, drug use or emerging sexuality or anything, and you live in a 2-1-bedroom apartment with a whole bunch of people. That's just not going to happen. So privacy issues are huge. Technology, I don't want to underplay technology. It's not just data, it's not just owning a smartphone, it's not just our older patients. Medi-Cal serves a very diverse population with a large number of challenges, and so we're going to need to look at the challenges for those populations. We may have hit the people who have an easy time using it, but we're going to leave people behind and create yet another divide. And then I want to spend just my last few minutes talking about the challenges for people who have special needs, hearing disability, vision disabilities, or who are very sick. And actually, someone I think saw that I was speaking about this today. I can't see who's in the audience, but someone sent me a really good paper about ensuring full participation of people with disabilities in the era of telehealth, and how we really, as an industry, are going to be challenged to, again, not create a new divide, not create a disequity divide in telehealth. So we're going to need to work out the challenges for those who are hearing impaired, visually impaired, and have other challenges. It's really hard to do that right now when the world is sort of in a cottage industry. Every practice is using their own platform. People are using FaceTime and Zoom. But as this matures, we're going to think about how we enable the members who have extra challenges to be able to participate in telehealth at the same level and as appropriate to people without those disabilities. So I just want to call out that while I'm really proud of our work in the CRCs and with our providers in creating Wi-Fi for people with outdated plans and privacy spaces, we are just beginning on this path of equal access to telehealth for all of our members. And I think that is actually my last slide. So I'm not very good at following directions, but I think I hand it back to the moderator now. So thank you all. And again, thank you, Francisco, for your partnership. These community resource centers are going to be really something, and we look forward to the end of the national emergency and the pandemic quieting so that we can really open them up to the public. Mike, I think back to you.
Outstanding. Thank you, Dr. Fleshman. Thank you, panel, for a very informative, timely presentation. A lot of innovation and I think real opportunity for our industry. So thank you very much. Anthony, questions from the audience?
We do have a few questions. And if anyone else has any additional questions in the audience, please type them into the questions pane. If you could be so kind as to let us know what organization you're with, that would be helpful. We already have your name. And I'm going to jump right into these. So this first question is from Carla Allison with Cigna. This question came up during Dr. Sweeha's presentation. And the question is this pilot tied to a specific product offering?
Yes, and I would have also Adam comment on that too. We're using that for the Blue Shield PPO product. However, whatever we're implementing is for all line of business. So maybe the funding is something, but it's really if one of the providers has the CHAs and in the clinic, for example, they address all patients. So it's beyond what line of business is. It'll be the same thing. If we use a platform, for example, let's say Wiser Care platform for social for the shared decision making, can use it for all patients, not necessarily going to be even Blue Shield patients.
Okay, great. And a follow-up question from Carla Allison from Cigna also came through during Dr. Sweetha's presentation. How do you assess the social needs? Is it an industry standard questionnaire or something you created for this purpose?
Yeah, no, it's an industry standard questionnaire. UNITAS is part of the platform, and addressing the, you know, it's a comprehensive evaluation. If you know the industry standard survey for that, it's a lengthy evaluation. And honestly, this is why an independent physician, primary care or specialist, doesn't have the resources or the time to do that. And that's why the CHAs are very much, you know, equipped with, number one, how to do the evaluation, and two, what are the resources available, and three, the follow-up and the continuity. You can imagine this is not a one-time thing. This is not, we are done, we refer the patient. There's continuity, there's follow-up, and there's re-evaluation too.
So Dr. Sweetha is correct that we have been piloting our payment model primarily in the commercial PPO line of business, because it's the most flexible and we can impact that the quickest. But from that work and from the lessons that we learn from these rapid pilots, then we can begin to expand, partner with other payers, of course, with the DMHC, and learn how to develop payment models for our other lines of business, including Medicare, Medi-Cal, and the duals program. So lots to come down the road. And in terms of how we screen for social determinants of health, we also arm our CHAs with the PREPARE tool, which is a relatively short tool that allows patients to answer some key questions to give the CHAs more knowledge about the impacts of those social determinants of health on their patients. Thank you.
Okay, great. This next question is from Danita Wolf from United Healthcare. And Danita says, historically, CHAs hired outside of an MCO have not been reimbursable services. Are you seeing any sign of this shifting?
Well, for the pilots, the current pilot, Blue Shield is funding them directly. So they are being provided to providers across the state. I forget how many were in the number that I showed, 28 or 22. We're funding all of those. And we are working towards a future state or a future plan whereby their services could be reimbursable as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the real question is, you know, whether they'll ever be reimbursable in the Medi-Cal environment. I actually think there's hope. I don't want to bring up CalAIM, which was put on hold, but you know, there's some fairly progressive thinking in there about how we serve people and thinking about outcomes instead of counting the widgets. You know, how many times did we do something? Let's look at our impact. I mean, I see the very beginnings of that, and I see the industry standardizing and training and pushing for reimbursement. It's just, you know, it's been a long and slow slog.
Yeah, and can I make a comment too? And I will add very good comments here. So, you know, before we ask even for the funding, we want to make sure that this can be operationalized. Does the model work? Does it have good outcome? Is it really what the providers and the patients can work with? And what we're finding, yes. Now, yes, of course, the next step is how we're going to fund this for when we scale it to, you know, the whole population. But we didn't even have the model. So the vision, the pilot, the value of this pilot is really to get at least the workflow, the challenges, the what works, what doesn't. And of course, we're finding things also that needs to be tuned up and work better. And that is really the value of this project.
Yeah, and we've put the community, the CHA model into the community resource centers in Los Angeles, which is a completely different model than embedding them into, you know, sort of the practice environment. And we'll learn from, you know, and we're funding that through the collaborative efforts of LA Care and Blue Shield Promise. And, you know, we'll see what we learn there. And sometimes specifically people are coming in because they're actually asking for help with some of the social determinants of health versus coming in for chest pain or something else, and then finding those underlying determinants as actually the driver for the health visits. So, you know, we'll be able to know what the impact from that is as well. Francisco, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Yeah, I think it's really a next step, and you know, the fundamental goal of the centers, I think, under this joint partnership between LA Care and Blue Shield Promise, is that we create a specialized experience for our health plan members. And I think part of that includes, you know, having them on site, being with them face to face, and being able to conduct these types of assessments and get our members to open up a little more about some of these issues that kind of fall into that category of social determinants of health. And I think these people resources, such as CHAs, community health workers, health promoters, I think there's a lot of different terminologies and different levels of training, but I think they can all serve that purpose. And they all come with, you know, various costs of training and compensation, but I think they can all serve a role in these types of environments, be it the FQHC, be it the clinical practice, be it a resource center. Absolutely.
I can all add right, one comment.
I'm sorry, here. Please go ahead, Dr. Sweetheart.
I'll add one comment. A great value for the providers, not just for the patients. Of course, the end is for the patients. That's our goal. But the learning for the providers about these resources that are available. When we talk with the providers, and I'm a physician too, and I know that I could have never imagined the depth of the resources available for patients. And I don't want to say it this way, but shame on us if we're not helping these patients with resources that are already available, but we just didn't know. And we didn't know how to even to help them with that. So the value of embedding them, or at least work with the team in the office, not just with the provider, with the ME. The ME knows the patient very well, talks to the patient a lot. And they actually talk not about the clinical issues, they talk more about the social issues and the social needs. So having this interaction with the healthcare team at the point of service, it's extremely valuable.
Okay, thank you. This next question, also from Danita Wolf of United Healthcare. And Danita says, I'm a huge supporter of CHAs. What sort of curriculum was developed / utilized for the CHAs?
The CHA program that we developed at Blue Shield was in partnership with our partners, including Dr. Sweeha. We modeled one of our early CHAs after the CHA program at Promise, at the Promise clinics. And then we worked with several external partners to continue to develop the curriculum even beyond that. One of my colleagues, Shannon Cosgrove at Blue Shield, has been instrumental, and Leigh Puri on her team have been instrumental in ongoing iterations to the curriculum for the CHAs. We've created ongoing, I think they call them coffee chats, with the CHAs to enable them to support each other and share stories and resources. But the curriculum itself was really a joint effort, and it's an ongoing effort with multiple partners.
All right, very good. And before we move on to the next question, Danita also wants to say thank you for this great presentation. I've advocated for CHAs, CHWs for years and reimbursement. I have high hopes for your pilot. So she just wanted you to know that. And this next question is from June Kales, and the question is, community resource centers, can you discuss your metrics for evaluating your successes and reason to grow the model?
Great question. The definition of success has definitely evolved over the years. Ellicare entered the resource centers phase, as I said, back in 2010, 2011. And the metrics were very simple. The original purpose was really to open the centers in parts of the community where we felt the physical presence and the visibility of the health plan would be helpful to members in providing them access to basic customer service, and also back in those days to help promote enrollment. And there was also a community benefit aspect through the programming that we would offer, which was at no cost and it was open to anyone in the community. So success really, to be honest, was were people showing up? Were they using the services? And were they happy when they left? And we felt we were doing a pretty good job at checking all those boxes. More recently, however, though, as we have evolved our partnership with Blue Shield, the definition of the metrics have really come into a much sharper focus. And we are now looking at the centers as platforms for delivering targeted services and interventions to segments of our member population that are around the centers, where we can actually show that we can move the needle on some of their behaviors and lead to better outcomes and reduce costs of healthcare. We have had quite a few different metrics we've been looking at that without this pandemic, I think we would have started working on some of those targeted interventions and some of that targeted member engagement. But unfortunately, this year has really been lost to the pandemic from that perspective. And we do expect that we will be able to start making those measurements and focusing on those specific types of metrics, moving member behavior and actually moving the needle on certain outcomes for certain groups of members through their interactions with the centers. And that's a big thing we're looking for next year.
Yeah, and Francisco, I'll just add, I'm a little newer to these centers and kind of came on board just as the COVID pandemic came on board. But, you know, conceptually, we think that we can move the needle actually on health outcomes in the neighborhoods in which these centers sit. So that's the sort of ultimate goal, is to use them to change metrics and including quality and, you know, including outcomes, including behavior, and of course cost. The pandemic did kind of throw a ringer into our plans, but, you know, just for example, we actually found a way to offer DPP, the Diabetes Prevention Program, which is a nationally recognized program with known positive outcomes. We're offering it virtually to our members. Whether it's as effective or not as in person, we don't know, but that gives you an example of trying to actually put programming into these CRCs that will drive a specific outcome. Once we can actually bring people in more than, you know, one every hour and into groups and have health education and classes and more face-to-face with CHAs and clinical staff, again, we'll pick some targeted outcomes and create programming to drive to those more clinical outcomes. But it's been very frustrating to have to put it all on hold.
As we close today's event, I want to thank all of our presenters, sponsors, and staff for putting together a great event. Well done. 2020 has been a challenging year for so many, and ICE has worked hard through all these challenges to continue to fulfill our mission of providing a platform and resources to improve healthcare delivery and regulatory compliance through collaboration and education in the managed healthcare industry. I want to thank the many health plans, providers, provider organizations, associations, and agencies, colleagues, and partners that support all this incredible work. On behalf of the ICE Board of Directors and the ICE leadership team, I want to thank all of you for attending today's virtual ICE conference. We hope to gather in person soon. In the meantime, stay safe, be healthy, and have a wonderful holiday season. Thank you.